From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. We do that by building the backyard advantage, which is really working on building the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. It's based around this culture of love. And, you know, I love entrepreneurs, and sharing the story of entrepreneurs is something that I feel like the most successful entrepreneurs should be on a pedestal, and we need to share their stories so it inspires the next one in line. And so today, that is what we are doing. We have Gabriel Covarrubias. Did I pronounce your written name right?
Yeah, that's really close. Covarrubias. Thank you.
Covarrubias. And, you know, we have kind of got to know each other. We met each other at a UCP fundraiser a few months back, and turns out we are kind of from the same industry initially, security cameras, and there was a little bit of bond over that, but we just started bonding too over family and discussing kind of like some of the things that dads, and I'm a grandpa now as well, but you know, that we go through, and dogs. So so you're a dog guy, and I wouldn't call myself a dog guy, but we got a bunch of dogs at our property. So I want to start the show by talking a little bit about that, because we started the show before you and I really got into this. And for the audience, this is how it came up. So about 40 minutes ago, you know, we had just celebrated a nice family win. I went home, worked out, and, you know, sat in the sauna, get up and decide I'm going to go for a ride in my Jeep with my wife, because we're getting some new gates put on the, you know, at our property. And so I jump in the Jeep to drive her across to go look at it. And we have like, there's a bunch of dogs on the property, but there's like three or four of them that like to chase the Jeep. And so they're chasing the Jeep, and I'm going pretty slow. And so we go look at the gates, and we're pulling away. I'm going maybe like 1 mile an hour, and this one dog that's like super fast, all of a sudden I hear yelping. Oh no, what happened? I could feel it under the Jeep. The dog had got under the Jeep somehow, and I was only going about 1 mile an hour, but the dog comes out limping, and I just felt like crap. Went to put the dog in the Jeep so we could take it to the vet or get it checked out or whatever, and it was my son's dog, and it bit me, and so I've got this bandage, and so I scrambled to get here in the show while everybody's dealing with the dog, taking it to the vet. But just, you know, life of, you know, real world life, you know, entrepreneurs, and, you know, we all have these things that, like, great day becomes this, you know, really bad day, and now it's a great day again because I'm talking to Gabe. But anyway, thanks for coming on the show. But you have a lab and a golden retriever?
Yeah. So I've got two senior dogs, I like to call them. I've got my rescue. She's approximately 13 years old. She's our golden retriever. Absolutely love her. We've had her for about 5 years. And then our family dog that we got when he was a puppy, it's our black lab. He turns 10 in October.
So interesting. I've been bit one other time in my life, and it was by a black lab. But we have three yellow labs, so they're whitish in color. What's the demeanor of your black lab? It sounds like a 10-year-old dog. Is it super friendly towards people and that kind of thing?
Yeah, super, super friendly. This guy will lick your hand, although far from biting it.
Wow.
And what's interesting about him, at 10 years old, anytime he meets somebody, you think it's the first time he's ever been introduced to humans.
Huh.
Because he gets so excited about any new scent. He just like will just start like, not really barking, but kind of yapping with excitement, almost like a cry, like, pet me, please give me attention.
Oh, wow. Sounds like a super cool dog. And our three yellow labs, sounds like they have a very similar demeanor. They're super friendly. They bark at the Amazon guy or whatever, but then he comes up and they're all, you know, happy to see him, actually. They're just barking. I don't know why.
Yeah, same with this guy. He barks to make noise, but if he actually sees a person, he's just going to run up to you and want you to pat him.
What made you decide to rescue the dog? Did you grow up being a dog lover type guy or...
Yeah, interesting story. So my wife and I are just total animal people, and that's, you know, gone down to our children. The unfortunate reality is my stepmom passed away in 2020. Mm. And so in her wishes was that one of the children take care of her dog.
Okay.
And so that's where we inherited the black lab.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, so the rest has been history with her. We brought her in immediately, and she's been taken in as one of the family members since then.
And you've got little kids, so they're probably great with those little kids.
Yeah.
That's how our dogs are, too. It's a good thing. And I hadn't had a dog for a long time since my kids were younger. And when COVID hit, we went out and got some yellow labs. And, you know, my wife's in heaven. So I know nobody's mad at me for running over the dog, but everybody feels really bad about it. So it's a tough deal. This show is not really about running over your dog. Although there are ups and downs in entrepreneurship, today was an up and a down. It started off as a great day, and now it's ended up being this weird day. So thanks for, I know I was a couple minutes late for the show, so thanks for sticking around. And let's share your story. Now, you built a business in security cameras, which is intriguing to me as a security camera guy. Let's talk about your journey. Tell me about this journey into entrepreneurship. And the name of your company's MSC Integration. It was Mr. Security Cameras, right? Or is it still that?
That is correct. That? Yeah, okay. So it's still Mr. Security Camera, okay. Inc. We're just doing business as MSC Integration.
And, gotcha.
And that change actually came about 4 or 5 years ago as we started offering a lot more than just video surveillance and security cameras. The business started doing card access, intrusion detection systems, live video monitoring, anything that really encompasses security needed for a business. And so we felt a name change was necessary to help express kind of who we are, what we do, and how we're going to do it. But the parent company is still Mr. Security Camera, Inc., and we still hold true to that. Hence, the MSC is just a play on words.
Okay, I didn't even catch what that stood for. Okay, well, I like the name Mr. Security Cameras because it's to the point. It's like if you have an incident and you want to get some cameras, okay, well, these guys are Mr. Security Cameras, not wannabe security camera dude. And your company's really grown over the years, and I think you may have worked with one of our companies. Is we do video surveillance in casinos, and I know you do like big jobs. We do pretty much enterprise type video security, and then we do a little bit of that card access and some of that stuff too. But you've built quite a business of a variety of industry verticals. So maybe tell me about the different parts of your business and the different customer types.
Yeah, so originally on, back in the early days of Mr. Security Camera, we were primarily a residential service company. To your point, we were the guys that if you had something security related for video, you called us. We were Mr. Security. And that really carried us through.
And that started like as a side gig for you, right?
It did. Yeah, it really started. I was in transitioning from another business. This is actually the fourth business I've started in my career. And I was transitioning out of a business, selling it back to my original partner at the time, just trying to figure out what I was going to do. I was just doing some like side gigs, working with some friends, and we were doing some Craigslisting, essentially installing security cameras for local bars and restaurants and things, unlicensed, didn't quite know what we were doing, but just having fun doing it. And that's what got us started. And in 2014, when we became a licensed contractor for Mr. Security Camera, Inc., we focused on that residential market, providing that quick turnaround. You can call us today. We're going to be out there tomorrow, pretty much installing cameras, getting your house protected. As that progressed over the years, in 2017, we made the shift to go from straight business to business. And our primary vertical now is going to be multifamily housing and light distribution warehouses.
Okay. I'm going to take the listeners down a little bit of a memory lane. Some may know this, but so when I got into security cameras, it was 1992. It was way back when, and the people that were in security cameras were doing it totally on the side. There really weren't too many security camera specialists. You had these alarm companies, right? So like a security company that does a burglar alarm, maybe a fire alarm. People started asking them for security cameras, and so they learned how to be security camera installers. Maybe there's an electrical contractor, and he gets a call, okay, yeah, I can figure it out. And so when I got in at that time, and because my mom and dad had owned a TV shop when I was a kid, the security camera thing, I won't say it was easier for me, but I was sort of attracted to it in a way. And that's predominantly why we built our, we had a handful of security camera companies, but very, very, very focused on security cameras versus, you know, the everything associated with security, and that, and deciding to specialize, at least at that time, ended up, I guess, being a blessing for us. So now you get into, take back to 2014 when you first started getting into this. Walk me through that. So it becomes an official business, and you started off with the residential site and maybe bars and small businesses. What was there a turning point in there where you said, wow, this is, I'm really onto something and I can really expand?
Yeah, actually, the turning point happened prior to us making it an official business. Back in 2023, we started getting into some customers, commercial customers that the light bulb started to turn on, and I said, wow, there is something here. There's a need in our local market, people that are not servicing it effectively. Going back to the types of companies that were offering the service were kind of one-man show alarm companies. And something that we were hearing from our clientele base at that time was they needed somebody they can call that's going to answer the phone, that's going to be able to provide support and walk them through help when they need it the most. And that's what we based the business on. And so when 2014 hit and the light bulb had already turned on at that point, I said, wow, we can do something here. We have not necessarily a secret sauce. Our secret sauce is communication. Hmm. We're going to be here. And we're not going to be a fly by night company. And what also happened at that time in 2014, we went from buying camera systems at Costco and installing them for you to finding a distributor at that time, which happened to be a company I think you might have some association with, Mark, Northern Video.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So, interesting enough, I went to one of our clients' facilities last week at Tykert. And they still had the original Northern Video PTZs we sold them back in 2014.
My gosh. Oh.
Still functioning, still great video quality, by the way. The server happened to pass away on us.
Okay.
But the cameras have outlived that.
The cameras
server.
Worked. Yeah. Okay. That's good to hear. That's pretty old, the Northern cameras. So for anybody that might be listening, so I owned a company called Northern Video, and it was actually a pro video company, and we sold basically no security cameras. And then we started selling Sony security cameras. Ultimately, we built it into like the largest independent security distributor in the country. It got bought by... we actually merged with another company and went on a roll-up strategy and bought a bunch of companies and became, you know, the largest security camera distributor in the country. And then we ended up getting bought a few more times later after I left the company. It's now, I think, part of the largest distributorship in this realm in the world. Do you still buy your stuff there?
We do, and that's Wesco now.
Wesco, okay. Yeah. I forgot the name of it. I don't deal with it anymore. I have my security camera company now. I'm like a silent... whatever we want to say. I'm like a silent passive investor, if you will. My brother-in-law runs it, so I'm not up to date on where we get all our stuff these days. So,
yeah, they still operate out of the original Triad, which was part of, I believe, your roll-up with Northern Video and Triad. Mm-hmm. So they're still there in Natomas.
Wow.
And they've been a great partner for us. We've been working with them since about 2014.
That's great. Do you guys buy from ScanSource at all?
Very
I think
little.
That's where we buy most of our stuff directly from the manufacturer, but when we have to buy something through distribution on the video side, I think we buy it from ScanSource, who got into the business, late in the game because they're just a distributor that got into video because they thought the video was an emerging technology. So interesting.
Yeah, we do a little bit with them. Our go-to is going to be Wesco, and then direct with manufacturers such as Avigilon.
Okay. Yeah. We deal somewhat with Avigilon as well. So now thinking about the technology, so it's interesting to think about how the technology has changed over the years. You know, back in 92, I kind of talked about people's reluctance to get into security cameras, and partially because they just weren't that good, and maybe people were like, kind of anti-Big Brother at that time. People were like, oh, you know, I don't want cameras all over keeping an eye on everything. It was like almost they were worried about them being offensive to their customers and to to the populace. But now I think people want security cameras. If you're a patron it makes us feel more safe when you know that you've got enough cameras up to keep track of stuff.
Well, most certainly. I think the industry and market has shifted 180 degree. Now people want to go to places that they know have an adequate video surveillance or security system. The world that we live in nowadays, it's gone from being the big brother to now adding that layer of protection that if you're going to go out to a shopping center or a shopping mall, knowing that there's video surveillance everywhere you go. And if you're out with your kids or your loved ones, knowing that you have that little extra layer of protection provides that peace of mind.
You sort of get used to it. They're everywhere. They're ubiquitous, if you will. And I don't know if you do this or not. You know, you hear the stories about if let's say your wife's pregnant and then you start noticing pregnant people. Well, if you're in the video surveillance business, if I walk into a store, especially if I go into a casino, which is like our customer base is all casinos, you know, they're everywhere. There's just thousands and thousands of cameras inside a casino. But a lot of times you sort of just get used to seeing them. They don't even stand out anymore because they're so small. But the technology is so much better than what they had been in the past, and they're getting better every day.
Yeah, most certainly getting better every day. And what I find to be fascinating about the technology shift is we went from, you know, just even a few short years ago where a lot of the analytics and computing was happening on site. You know, it was happening at a camera level or a server or NVR level that was located on premise. And now that the industry is pivoting to cloud, the possibilities and capabilities are absolutely endless. Yeah. And it is amazing what we can do with video nowadays to maximize, you know, coverage, to searching, video investigations, and the time that we've been able to cut out of the picture. What used to be a full-time job, we can now do in minutes and in seconds.
Yeah, it's crazy how much better it's getting. And I heard this on the news today that, and I attribute it at some level to security cameras, but I hear crime's actually coming down in America, some recent statistics, even though, you know, maybe it's gone up over the last several years due to, you know, how well we enforce the law. But I think surveillance cameras catch bad guys, bad people. And, you know, we have all kinds of examples of solving challenges in society by just piecing things together because more people have cameras.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it something I've said for years is it helps keep honest people honest, right? Mm. It takes that opportunistic criminal and makes them think twice. You know, they see a bag sitting on a table at a restaurant. They know that there's cameras. Maybe they might have been a not so good person and said, I'm going to take that opportunity and steal that bag or steal that phone. Yeah. But I feel a lot of that is starting to become alleviated throughout time with the implementation of video.
Yeah, there's kind of like a peace of mind. Now, one of the things that you did, you were telling me about, is you made an investment into, I'll call them towers. I don't really know what you call these things, but they're portable surveillance systems that go high in the sky to keep track of, it could be construction site or something like that. And that has done pretty well for you guys.
Yeah, most certainly. So that's our latest brand that we launched officially September of 2024, which is our Mr. Security Camera Trailers brand.
Okay.
So that's for our mobile security units. Those are completely off-grid, cellular-enabled, generator backup if need be, eyes in the sky. We've got a few different models that we can deploy within, I'd say, less than 24 hours.
Wow.
So the time a client calls us, I mean, we've even done same-day delivery. We just did for a local police department in the Bay Area last week. And so it's becoming increasingly popular to cover those off-grid areas or areas that might be a little cost prohibitive to put in a full integrated security system. We can deploy that unit, like I said, within 24 hours. We can custom tailor the solutions to any client's needs. Most of those units go out for job site security and parking lots, as well as special events.
Yeah, that's what I was imagining is you mentioned law enforcement. I started thinking, well, how would that work? But picture there's a protest you know is going down, or you've heard about something happening, and it's like, well, we better bring extra security, and it's instead of just showing up with 200 cops, let's show up with 100 and a couple of trailers, and you know, we can basically manage part of the system the situation from a remote location versus like everybody's stuck down in the crowd.
Exactly. And that was the use case for that local municipal. Was a union strike, actually. And so they were worried about some retaliation during that strike. They were short-staffed in officers, so we were able to maximize their capabilities and coverage by getting those trailers out there. So within 24 hours, we had three units deployed and providing extra eyes in the sky that one officer can manage all of those units. They get full live feed on those trailers.
Interesting, because you hear that there are less, and I don't know if you've heard this or not, but I've heard that there are people out there that don't really want to go into law enforcement because of backlash from society, or you know, certain people or don't like cops and stuff like that. So maybe the recruitment for strong police officers is maybe a little bit more difficult than it might have been 10 or 20 years ago. But cameras are actually an affordable way to deal with, and a safe way to deal with, a security scenario where you're not really putting police officers, as many police officers, in harm's way.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it's just the nature of that industry right now and the stigma that's been put on it by society, to your point. It is increasingly harder for them to recruit. And you know, most jurisdictions that we speak to are understaffed in that department. Mm-hmm. So being able to get them an affordable way to utilize what resources they have and provide that at a cost-effective solution is something that we're able to help with.
Yeah, and then I feel like it would make sense, too, because a lot of times these guys, these government agencies or even a larger, you know, corporation, it's hard for them to allocate the funding for, let's call it 500 cameras, and a complete system might just be like, that's a CapEx expense. We got to go to through all these layers of approval, and it's not in this year's budget, and stuff kind of gets kicked down the, you know, the can gets kicked. But we have an event, let's go rent a trailer, let's go get a couple of trailers. You could sort of like almost make it a variable expense, so you deal with it more on a, you know, as needed basis, versus like we just had this massive outlay, now we have a small outlay every time we, you know, feel like we have threats or opportunity to, you know, get hit.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, the beauty about our mobile security units is they fall typically under an operating expense budget, not a CapEx budget, because it is a much lower cost of entry. We don't sell the units, so we only lease them out on rental term. And that's where it comes in, is that operating expense as opposed to that CapEx.
And on one trailer, how many cameras are there typically?
Typically four.
Okay.
We do have some custom units where we have up to six cameras on them, depending on the use case.
So four cameras will typically, you're looking, that you have 360 degree coverage. It's like front and back. You can see everywhere.
Yeah, 360 degree coverage. We equip all of our trailers with PTZ cameras. Mm-hmm. So pan, tilt, zoom, up to 25 times optical zoom. So from any direction that we're looking into, we can zoom that camera in up to 300 feet effectively.
Right. So you're, everything is transmitted to the cloud. So somebody is actually pan, tilting, and zooming from a remote location if they're doing it live. Is that right?
That is correct.
So you can do that live through the crowd, and you could be back at police headquarters, if you will, and zooming in on a hotspot. And I would assume, like, I'm not up on the latest technology, but there's things like facial recognition, and there's different kinds of things that you can have the camera look for and help highlight certain issues, right?
Yeah, most certainly. So the facial recognition, we've got some behavioral analytics that we can implement, as well as audio analytics that can help detect threats from a noise level. Now, all of those are just customized features that we could add on to any mobile security unit. And same with facial recognition and any sort of analytic, we can add that on the back end, because now all of that's done in the cloud computing side, and it's not hardware limited on the actual trailer.
Wow, so cool, so cool. So what's the, all right, so where do you think the industry is going? And then I want to hear sort of your vision for where MSC is going. But from an industry standpoint, security is, from what I can tell, is people, there's an increasing need for security and an increasing desire for cameras specifically. So I think we're on a growth trajectory. You and I are both in a business that is probably going to grow pretty steadily over the next several years.
Yeah, most certainly. And our data is showing that as well. When it comes to video and card access and intrusion, that is a market that is going to continue to grow for the foreseeable future. Aside from your statistic you brought up earlier, most would argue that, you know, is crime getting better or worse? And most response to that is it's not getting
better. Of course
better.
It's getting worse. It feels worse.
It is.
So I just heard it on the news as I was coming in from getting my finger bit, and I heard it on John McGinnis' show. I was listening to KPK, and I'm like, crime's going down, really? I did not know that.
Exactly. And it's subjective maybe to a local area. Zip code maybe, but realistically, I feel that crime is not getting better. As our population continues to grow, there's going to continue to be more and more crime and the need for security. Yeah. The industry right now is in a really good position as things are starting to shift to all cloud computing for the security side of the business. We went from strictly on-premise, very high cost, initial investment, getting your servers and cable infrastructure, et cetera, bringing that cost of entry up pretty high. Now, cloud side of things makes it scalable, affordable, and you can go to infinity in terms of scalability. You're not limited to the hardware you have on site anymore. So that's a big push for our company at MSC. We've almost strictly gone to cloud-based offerings for gate entry systems, card access, and video.
And the compute power is increasing at this exponential rate. It's incredible how AI is infiltrated every technology in the world, but it is making strides in video analytics that is really game changing for video security, and really anybody who's doing things with video right now is seeing AI come in and be really helpful and really disruptive as well.
Yeah, one of the big shifts that our manufacturers implemented in the last few months is now instead of looking through video, we can talk or text into our VMS software, and we could say, I'm looking for a gentleman with a white t-shirt and blue jeans on and blonde hair, and it's going to pull up that video in seconds.
Oh my gosh.
And it's going to scrub awkward. All of the cameras on that account or the selected cameras that you mm-hmm. choose from. So going to that video investigation piece, we've really expedited that process tenfold.
That's incredible. That's awesome, actually, because that means we're getting to the... Because time is of the essence. If you're on an investigation or you're looking to solve some issue, time is critical. If you have to go back and rewind the tape and search and, you know, who is that guy? And you zoom in and it looks like crap. All of that technology is just making things... makes all the solutions happen at a very fast pace.
Yeah.
So you solve more crime.
And I like to express that, like, think of something, you know, not as bad per se as like a lost child at a mass transit. Maybe you get separated from your child at an airport and you've got a recent picture. You could run up to security and say, I'm missing my son. He's about 4 feet tall. He was last seen in a red shirt. They could type that in and scrub all the data within seconds to find that.
That's incredible.
And that's something that we're really proud to be a part of. We're not the manufacturers of that equipment. We're the integrators. We're the installer. Mm-hmm. We're the person that hands off to the end user to make sure that we implement the systems effectively and train them on the use case.
Well, it's great that you do that. Have you ever done work in prisons?
We have.
Okay, so we used to sell, we didn't go in and do the integration into prisons, although my current company has done a little bit of that, but... that can be an experience. I assume, what prisons have you done? Have you worked on?
Well, so we were a subcontractor for a nationwide integrator, and we have touched, about 25 of the 32 prisons here in the state of California.
Oh my goodness.
Our team was the installation piece behind those. So I've done more time in prison than most would ever admit, but they let me out every day. And so as a project manager working on those sites, I've seen a lot of interesting things.
Well, they've got cameras, on keeping track of death row people, and people are in it for life. And, you know, it's like, oh, my gosh, you got to go into some very hostile areas where people, they have nothing to lose anymore. And you're in and among those people. Obviously, I would assume they provide a level of comfort for you so that you don't feel completely at risk. But That's got to be scary.
Yeah, I would say that the very first time entering a prison, I walked into a prison down in Central California called KVSP. And we were walking the site with the assistant warden, all the engineers, project managers associated with this job site. I want to say total implementation was around 1,100 cameras. And we're walking through one of the yards, and you know, we're in a group of maybe 20 people, about five of them.
20 civilians.
20 civilians, mm-hmm. Yeah, about five of them, maybe more, were correctional officers that kind of kept us in a pod. And we walk through the gates of the yard, and we get to the programs, which is where they have all their commissary and things like that, library. And we get into the programs area, and the gate shuts, and I'll never forget this, the siren sounded about 5 seconds later. And ooh. I'm like, what is going on here? Within about 60 seconds, we see COs coming from all directions, and they're in riot gear, and a riot had kicked off on the yard.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, me being new to this environment, completely caught off guard, I'm like, do we run? Do we hide? What's going on kind of thing? And they're like, no, we have to go into this room. And everybody was very calm about it. And, you know, after the fact, speaking with some of the COs there, it was interesting because they had acknowledged that they saw this coming. And what I thought was interesting, it was nothing had happened until we left the yard. And as soon as, you know, the contractors and everybody associated with the project left the yard, that's when the riot took place. And I don't know the outcome of that situation. I just know that nobody in our group was harmed whatsoever. But there was a level of, you know, angst originally getting into the prison work. We did prison contracting for about 5 years.
Wow.
Up and down the state of California, throughout Texas, Florida, and Louisiana. And, you know, the general consensus that our team had received from, you know, inmates as we were working around inmates for many years is we were kind of the heroes to them, which is really interesting to think. So putting in the video surveillance really helped them, you know, from issues that they might have had with correctional officers or abuse and things like that. So
interesting. My former son-in-law is a prison guard at Folsom, and he's in the worst of the worst. And he has described to me that just as he begins to, you know, enter the town of Folsom, he doesn't live in Folsom, you know, his whole he has a visceral reaction to every morning when he goes to work. It's like before he gets to work, it all of a sudden hits him because it's such a high stress sort of environment. So you got to just hand it to those people that do that on a daily basis. You don't think about, like, you are just in danger for the whole shift. And being a contractor is bad as well, or it's not bad, but scary, or, you know, probably had your heart racing. I was at CrossFit preparing for the Murph, which is a CrossFit workout for, it's kind of, they call it a hero workout. And a group of our CrossFit people were going to go over to Folsom Prison and compete against the guards. So they're like, Mark, you want to go compete? And nah, that's okay. My son-in-law says it's not that fun. So I've never been on Folsom Prison grounds, and I don't know that I really have a desire to. I don't know. Would you go back on there? I mean, you quit doing it. Sounds like you were doing it until more recently, but why'd you quit?
Yeah, the contract term had ended. Okay. That was a term with the state of California, and some changes happened with the prime contractors. They were acquired. You know, Mark, you're not missing much.
Okay.
You know, it's not a desirable place. You know, it's interesting to witness some of the things that we did and see some of the unique places that myself and our team got to be a part of. But it's not a place that you're going to run back to and say, man, I can't wait to get on the grounds of another prison.
Yeah, you're going to have to pay me a lot of money to go get in there because of the you know, I would think that would be where your company approach would be. It's like, if I've got to put that kind of stress on the team, it needs to be a lucrative contract. Otherwise, it's just not worth it.
Agreed. And we did take it on. It was, you know, fairly lucrative for the time that we were in with that contract. But it's not an area that we run back for. We're happy in our current lane. Mm-hmm. We do a decent amount of government contracting, mostly for facilities, DGS, that type of stuff. And then we work with local municipals, but we've been happy to get out of the prison and even local jurisdictions for jails and things like that. Yeah. Because the jails, I would honestly say, were worse. Those people, they don't have necessarily the respect that you would get in a prison from the inmates. Again, there's a
what
a,
now?
Yeah, there's
the
a
jail whole, feels sketchier than the prison.
Yeah,
because the people in the jail that are there, let's call it short term, they have less respect.
I would say so.
Wow,
yes.
That's interesting.
The prison, and not to get into it because I don't know a lot of it, is there is I heard it when I went on the first prison is a term called prison politics, and they have their own little society there. A guard had once told me, he goes, "Remember, you're a guest in their house." And I said, "Well, why is that?" He goes, "Because they sleep here and we all go home. And so they show a certain level of respect to the inmates and the inmates give them a certain level of respect." As a contractor, we didn't feel threatened in most prisons. Jails were different. Jails, it seemed like people would make comments and try and you'd say things, ask you for screwdrivers or lighters or that type of stuff. But prison didn't happen very often.
Well, I guess that's a note to anybody out there. Don't get yourself arrested and go to jail for even a night. It might not be too pleasant.
And don't go to prison.
Yeah, I mean, definitely don't go to prison.
Let's face it. That's not a place I think anybody would desire to be. But
okay, this is an interesting show. We've taken the show in some different directions today. But I always like to know two last questions is like, what's the vision for the company? And then I'll finish with, you know, one or two last questions. But what's the vision for MSC moving forward?
Yeah, great question. Right now, we have two legs of the business. I have pivoted my focus and gone to our mobile side of the business. And currently, we're expanding our mobile security units rapidly. From last year to this year, we 3X'd our inventory, our fleet. Mm-hmm. This year, we're looking to hit our first 100 units by the end of the year.
Wow.
And have those units leased out. It's one thing having them sit in a parking
lot. Yeah.
We want to make sure they're out protecting properties and facilities. On the integration side of the business, we're going to continue to focus our growth trajectory there, pivoting our clients to cloud-based solutions. A big growth for us right now has been card access. As you see in the news on a regular basis, unauthorized individuals gaining access to businesses, buildings, et cetera, and unfortunately doing some heinous crime. So that is a big vertical for us that we're focusing a lot of effort and energy into to make sure that we provide a comprehensive product for our clients.
Wow. And so what did I not ask you that I should ask you? What message should we get out there that about your business or about anything else you're working on?
That's a great question. I think you asked some really good questions. You know, I'm a Sacramento native here, born and raised in Carmichael.
What high school do you go to?
Interesting enough, Mark, and I'll say this on the air here, I'm an eighth grade dropout.
Really?
So I did not go to high school. I grew up primarily in the foster system from the age of 6. And left the foster system at the age of 13.
Tell me about that. Okay, so you left the foster system. The foster system, I assume that was a very difficult set of transitions. From what I've heard that, you know, there's a guy named Dale Carlson, a local person that has really helped a lot of that system and helped so many people through the sleep train. So I followed the stuff he's working on, and there's these really cool inspirational stories about people that have had it so difficult and then lived to, you know, really do great things in their life. But was it was the foster system difficult for you?
Most certainly. It was tough. My brother and I were separated. I want to say I was about 8 years old. He's a year and a half older than me, so he's probably about 9 and a half, 10 at that time. We got separated in the foster system and went to different homes. Had a family member that took me in for a little while. And that was short lived. That lasted about 2 years. And so through various group homes. Group homes, yeah. Yeah. So
what's a group home like for a little kid?
Yeah. Very scary, number one.
Oh, wow.
Number two, I mean, it's, you know, I think they were called orphanages or various okay. names over our time, but now they consider them a group home. It's going to be a location that's a safe haven for children to come. And so in the event that you get separated from a family member, your parents, the first stop you're going to go to is going to be a group home. That home is going to house you in a pod with maybe 16 other kids of your age and gender. They'll have a school on site. They'll have teachers and counselors that you would still try and live a normal life as possible. But everything to the Dale Carlson Ticket to Dreams, we work with those guys too a little bit. You know, you live out of a black trash bag as you transition. And so...
Wow. Okay. So you got whatever, all your belongings are in a big... put them in a big trash bag.
Big trash bag, yeah.
And so you leave your... family member's house who only wanted to have you for... Did you get in trouble and you had to go to there?
Got in trouble.
And then so then you got... Hey, sorry, you're going to the group home?
Well, a little bit different. You know, got in trouble. I wasn't one for authority at a young age, mm-hmm. so I would run away. And in the event I would run away, if I would run into a law enforcement figure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't a criminal. I was a little kid, and so they'd take you back to the group home. And every time you transition, for my situation, anytime I would transition out of a foster home, you know, if they couldn't find housing for me right away, it would be back to the group home. Yeah.
Wow. And so you go to school. Did you go through like seventh and eighth grade at the group home, or did you go to a school like in Sacramento?
Yeah, seventh and eighth grade, I went to some local middle schools here, Star King and Churchill, and I was living with foster families during that time, yeah.
And then you tell them one day you don't want to go back to school?
One day I get in trouble at the end of eighth grade. And
what'd you do?
I came home late because I wanted to spend the last day of school with a girl I had met. And of course, boys and girls is all the trouble. So I came home late, and when I'd gotten home, you know, I was abused a little bit. Not bad, and not to go down that, but we'll talk a little bit later. So I took off. You know, the individual decided that they thought it was justifiable to hit me.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I ran away. That was actually the last home I had ever lived in. And I'd been on my own ever since the age of 13.
Where did you live? You just, where did you go to like get shelter and stuff like that?
Yeah, great question. I have been able to surround myself with some really great individuals that I still call family to this day. So I just had older friends. Wow. You know, I lived in my first apartment with a good friend of mine. He was 18. I was 13. And
he had a great
paying
job.
Slept on the couch. He had a great paying job. And I found ways to create side hustles. You know, I was a great Craigslist advertiser and sales guy at a very young age. I would take things from garage sales, things that maybe he was getting rid of, and found ways to generate income. Yeah.
Wow. So you've always been like that. I guess that's what difficult times brings out of people, brought out of you. Difficult times caused you to be sort of scrappy and use your ingenuity. Craigslist.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I started learning a skill. I had a good friend, I think I was probably about 15 years old, taught me how to tint windows in automobiles. So I would work under the table at his shop here in Sacramento and would tint windows. So that was a good gig for a while. And in fact, in 2008, that turned into my very first business. I opened a window tinting shop over there off Marconi and 80. So it's very first business.
Wow.
In a rough time to start a business too.
Yeah, how old were you then, 2008?
I was 18.
Okay.
And so it was probably within a month after my 18th birthday, I went down and got my first business license.
And now look what you've built. I mean, you've got this you're putting in thousands and thousands and thousands of cameras. You've got these mobile trailers. You've got a vision for growth, and you're still a young dude. I mean, you're still a really young guy with a young family. You are just a great, I guess, story of, my shirt says everything is figure outable, which is one of my mottos, and you are a you're living proof that everything is figure outable, no matter what kind of circumstances you put yourself in. Even if you get your, you are a little anti-authority, maybe have a chip on your shoulder for one reason or another, you can straighten it all out and figure it out.
That's so true, Mark, and I love that on your shirt. I'm going to have to get one of those shirts from you. It is something I live by, that you can figure out just about anything. And, you know, to the point of hardship and trouble and setbacks, I learned at a young age that no matter my story, no matter what I'm going through, somebody always has it worse. And I'm the last person to say, oh, pity me, or, man, I didn't have this. I didn't have that opportunity growing up. I didn't have the parents that stayed together. I didn't have that. But instead of saying, wow, this was the cards I was dealt and I have to deal with that, I said, no, I'm going to change that trajectory. I'm going to be the difference in that family line. And that's something that motivates me every morning. And now married with two kids, beautiful family. Absolutely love my family. And, you know, I look back, my wife had the great, great family upbringing, beautiful parents, stayed together there her whole life and high school and college, all that fun stuff. And you know, as we started a family, I said to myself and to her, I'm not going to do what I had done to me, and just making sure that I'm the change in that path. But I never let my past be something that's going to hold me back in what the future holds, because possibilities are endless. It's all up to us and what we make of it.
Well, I was going to ask you for words of wisdom for somebody who's aspiring to be an entrepreneur, but I can tell you, you've added a lot of wisdom and a lot of inspiration, and I didn't really understand that this was going to come out of this show, but I'm really honored that you came on the show and were, you know, made yourself vulnerable. You shared the real you. But is there any other words of wisdom that you might have up your sleeve?
Words of wisdom, specifically if we're talking to some younger individuals that are thinking about entrepreneurship, is don't give up. And, you know, no idea is a bad idea. You know, see it through, try it, run it by your peer groups, talk about it, but don't give up, and don't use your past as a crippling to your future. Right? It's up to you. You hold the keys of what you're going to make of your future.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing your story. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I didn't expect it to come out. Just, you know, I used to run from the truth there, and you know, it's something I would never lie about, but I would just deviate the question. And as I've gotten older and decided that that's not something I want to hide necessarily, I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, you can come from any walk of life and still do great things in society. And that's something I strive to do every day.
You can come from any walk of life and do great things. Wow. What a statement. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Mark.
You bet. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.